More data is still to come from the AMP trials. Two people who will be paying close attention are researcher Devin Salk, who's the executive director of antibody discovery and development at IAVI, and advocate Mark Hubbard, who has been part of the AMP protocol team from its first draft as a community representative. Daisy began our conversation.
As we've seen, the AMP results were a little bit more than complicated, with a lot of nuances and a lot of scientific jargon that we saw when the HVTN presented the results. I wanted to ask you, Mark, what questions did the AMP study answer for you that you had around antibodies, and what new questions did it raise?
So I think there's things that we know from the AMP studies, and then there's things that the AMP study results suggest. I think the top line we have to be frank about is that VRCL1 was not effective in a large efficacy trial. No qualifications about that. That's the truth. I think what's suggested by the data from the trial is it's possible that we might find a product that's a combination of antibodies that could be useful for HIV prevention. It's possible that the TZMBL assay will be useful in screening candidates. I don't think we know that. I think the study results suggest that it will be useful. I think the trial results suggest that it may be difficult to develop such a product. You know, the product we tested only worked in viruses that were really sensitive. So how do you come up with a product that is potent against a broad spectrum of strains? And I think we learned that our understanding, even though we brought the best experts to the table, we've seen that some of those assumptions were not valid.
Mark, can you dig into that a little bit? Tell us more about what some of those assumptions were.
You know, we went into this trial thinking that we were going to be able to tell from the two doses that there was this magic level of antibody present in the blood that would be effective. And as it turns out, and this is complex, it had more to do with sensitivity than volume of the product present, at least at the doses that were tested in this trial. So that's one assumption. Another assumption was that it was useful to use a specific lab assay to predict how many strains would be susceptible. There was an assumption about what strains would be present in the tested population that didn't turn out to be reflective. So that's why I keep going. I don't think that these were bad assumptions. I think they were best efforts. It's a cutting edge mode of prevention, and our understanding was not well developed. And I think maybe we thought it was more well developed than it turned out to be. And so that's useful information to come out of a clinical trial, in my view.
So I think we'll turn to Devin. What questions did AMP answer for you, and what new questions did it raise?
Yeah, thanks, Daisy. So I guess just to build off of what Mark had already mentioned, the AMP trial, it wasn't designed like your typical phase 2, phase 3 efficacy trial. I think it was designed with the expectation that we're going to learn things, but we're not going to necessarily hit it out of the park and have a product that's going to be ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. I think the big question for me that was answered was, can antibodies protect against infection? If they can protect, in what conditions do they protect? Despite overall the efficacy not being, you know, high, antibodies are protective. And they are protective if you are exposed to a very sensitive virus to that antibody, which is kind of what we kind of knew, but didn't expect to see such a clear cutoff for sensitivity in the field. So viruses that are super sensitive, you are protected against. The second aspect was what concentration is required for protection. The way that a study was designed, there's no true measurement of this is the concentration of the antibody that when someone was exposed to the virus enabled protection. The best we can do with the way that a study was designed is give a really rough estimate of it's within this range. And that estimate matched a lot of the preclinical study that we've done in non-human primates.
Okay, so we're talking about a range that estimates the level of antibody you need in your blood to be protective against HIV. And of course, this antibody has to be fighting a virus that's super sensitive to it. And the estimate that AMP came up with echoes what researchers have been seeing in preclinical studies and in animal studies. AMP's the first time we're seeing this protection in humans.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. Of all the data we've generated preclinically in animal models, the data we see in the field actually match quite well, which I think is really encouraging. The outstanding question from that is that broadly applicable to all antibodies? What happens if you have combinations of antibodies? And what happens when you have a larger diversity of viruses?
I wanted to follow up. Do these results apply to single antibodies? Can they apply to the combo antibodies? Are we able to use this type of prediction to narrow down what it is that we're going to use in the future?
So that is the big question in the field. How much can we extrapolate from the AMP trial? Have we gotten enough data and information to say, okay, it's applicable to all the different antibodies targeting different regions of HIV and different combinations? That's a big unknown. And that's where I think there a lot of the scientific debate is how universal are these findings? So I think the big question for the field for us all to kind of grapple with is, do we continue to run AMP-like trials for other antibodies, targeting other regions on HIV, targeting different epitopes, or combinations of antibodies, and kind of march down this really structured, scientifically driven, hypothesis-driven, experimental medicine approach? Or do we say, we got a bit of an answer, let's put our best combination forward and run a large efficacy trial?
Some have raised the idea, since we have such great progress with antiretrovirals to protect against HIV, how do we justify, what rationale do we use to say we should continue to invest in antibody research? How do you answer that question?
I think it comes back to the veterans in the HIV world know this very well. It comes down to choice. And the more choices that we have available, the more that we can empower people to choose what makes the most sense for them.
Mark, do you have a different answer than Devin?
So the question comes back is an antibody injectable better than an ARV injectable? And we can have that argument all day. The other piece that, you know, that's not in the simple question is, what will this tell us about the development of a vaccine, which is really where we want to be?
Can I follow up on the question around
MAST infections?
Oh, yeah, because researchers are exploring if some of the HIV infections that occurred in the AMP study may have been undetectable for a time. But let's start with a definition. What is a MAST infection?
And is there a test that can tell that you have a MAST infection?
First of all, I want to say this is a newly coined term. So it is not a scientific term. It is not a solidly defined or validated term. And the protocol was actually changed to strengthen its ability to protect participants and detect this. But I think for participants, what it means is there was some period of time when you had virus or an infection on board that was not detected by the tests used in the study, which are probably a little more sophisticated than you would get on the street. My understanding, and Devin did say this is inferred at this point.
It's a hypothesis. With a MAST infection, that timeline to that peak viremia that's very clinically typical is delayed or suppressed. And so it enters kind of this gray zone of, is this person infected? Are they protected? And at what time were they infected? And that's kind of what is the role of the antibody?
So that partially answers Daisy's question. My understanding, this is not about them going back to prior blood samples and being able to see that the person was infected. So the question of whether or not we could create an assay that would detect this is open. So I think as advocates, we need to be more robust in our question asking at the beginning of any new prevention trial. How are we going to deal with this? Are there better ways to detect it? Are we more careful in informed consent? That's on my to-do list immediately, that this has to be disclosed in the informed consent. But I think we have to be very careful not to pretend that we understand this completely yet.
And Devin, you're drawing lessons from what we know about antiretrovirals.
Yeah, remember, we want to look at the antibody product with the same lens, that this is a single drug product. It's not a combination. If we take the same parallels with antiretrovirals, it's the same thing. You wouldn't expect that a single antiretroviral would be effective. That's why we have these combination treatments.
You've both been thinking and talking about 30 years of effort to overcome HIV, an incredibly challenging virus. How does the AMP study fit in this history? What do these results mean for the big picture?
I was thinking earlier about language around this. Doing trials on the cutting edge is an exercise in risk-taking. By no means do I mean risk to participants, but risk in terms of use of resources, decision-making, and expectations about outcomes. Whatever decisions had been made 6 years ago would have been an exercise in risk-taking. So this was really a trial designed to try to answer a number of scientific questions simultaneously, and I think it succeeded at some level in doing that. I believe, and I have no way of knowing, that we will continue to learn more.
From my perspective, I think it's a huge, huge, huge milestone. In the same way that RV144 was a huge milestone, I think these are big conceptual theories that we've been kind of advancing in the lab without a clear signal that it's going to work in the field. And this is the first validation that, at least speaking personally, that the past 10 years of research is going somewhere. It's not there yet. We still have a lot of things to work out, but at least it's going in a direction that makes sense. And to me, that's a huge win. And I'm very optimistic and enthusiastic that we're going to be able to build off this positive signal moving forward. That being said, I think there are questions about it. I'm not a true believer. If antibodies don't work, they don't work. But I do think if there is a positive signal, how do we maximize that to public health benefit?
The AMP trials are raising complex and important questions about the direction of research in broadly neutralizing antibodies. On AVAC.org, you can find our companion publication to this podcast, Understanding AMP, to explore some of these questions in more detail. And keep watching. AVAC will have more tools and resources coming your way to keep you informed about the potential AMP progress of this cutting-edge area of prevention. Thanks for listening to PX Pulse. I'm Jean Barron. You've been listening to PX Pulse, recorded in the New York City studios of the Radio Foundation and the Relic Room. Our theme music was composed by Alexi Stevens. Our engineer is Sam Baer.